Once again, this is Tools for the Times. This is Session 7. This is the 12th of May of 2015. My name is Mark Stanton Welch, and I'm happy to be here, along with my cohort, Mark Alark, who has made his presence very well known now that we've given him permission. But here's just a way to start. So it is. So it is. It's a cold day here in the West Coast. Got a wind that's been coming up in the mid-afternoon, and it just sort of blows through. And even though the sun's been out, down where I live, it's in a forested area, and it is the sun peeks through, actually, for a good portion of the day. But then as soon as it goes behind the trees and filters through those trees, the cold wind starts to eat things up. And I just went outside to catch a breath of air, and just before the class started here, and right outside there was a little deer. And I went out. She looked at me. I looked at her. We chatted for a moment. I'm not sure what she said, but I know what I said. And I came back inside as she walked away, and then went to my medicine cards, a book by Jamie Sams and a fellow named Carson, and looked up deer. And deer is, it's called, deer is gentleness. And it says, deer, if deer is gently nudged its way into your cards, you're being asked to find the gentleness of spirit that heals all wounds. Stop pushing so hard to get others to change and love them as they are. Apply gentleness to your present situation and become like a summer breeze, warm and caring. This is your tool for solving the present dilemma you are facing. If you use it, you will connect with Sacred Mountain, your centering place of serenity, and Great Spirit will guide you. I like that. And so does my little boy. Mark Alark decided that he wants to be included in these things, and so he wrote an opening statement here. In fact, that's why I had to get outside, because he wrote so fast. I hope I can read it. But he wanted to be included. He said, this is Mark Alark. He says, I'm delighted to be talking to you again, like I am the teacher. He said, I like that thought. It isn't something I've ever wanted to do, but I like it because I wanted to be a train engineer, and then I wanted to be an astronaut, and then, well, anyway, I'm so happy that Mark feels me. I tried for so long, and he wouldn't listen. He would feel especially anger and fear, but he did not know it was me calling. It was sad to me to be ignored. I just kept doing what I always did, and life showed up the same way. We started and stopped so many times, and sometimes tears would flow, but nothing came of it. Now it's so cool. I feel he gets... I am not talking to myself. He doesn't always listen, but I know how to get his attention. So whoever's coughing right there, would you star six? And so I want to say something to your little one inside. I love you, and I believe in you. And please do not worry, because your big self is here and almost ready to come home to loving and supporting and protecting and playing with you. I promise. And this is to the big you. Quit messing around. Love your boy or girl. Start living. Together is where the fun and the beauty are. I mean it. Tonight's tonight. I can feel it. Can you? So that concludes our State of the Union Address with Mark Alark there. I like that he's involved here. Tonight we're talking about the flowing of emotion. And I'll start off, although I've already started off, I want to start off another element here. just a quick a cappella version of the song that I use in the Trust Your Vibe CD. It says, things happen and I respond. Of this I am aware. Usually a feeling comes, seems like from nowhere. I can ignore it, I can deny, try to think it through. All along the feeling tried to tell me what is true. Trust what I feel it is my wisdom talking to me. Trust what I feel, it's real, as real can be. As real can be. So that pretty much encapsulates the evening's information and the experience we're going to be having together. It is about feeling. We are here to feel. It is one of the main purposes for the actual manifestation of this dimension and planet, and the uniqueness of the Earth dimension is that it is a feeling dimension. And isn't it ironic that it is feeling is one of the things that is most frightening as a feeling to culture, society, peoples, and it has been pushed away so effectively that people have become frightened of feeling. Not everyone, but as a culture, as a race, many are. Until now. And this is where things are starting to shift. So tonight, we're going to look at the nature of emotion very briefly. I'm going to talk to you about emotional literacy and the idea behind that. We're going to look at the basics of what are considered the basic emotions of joy, sadness, fear, anger, and grief. And we're going to realize there are probably at least 100 permutations of those that can be classified as feelings, and that's why it gets so confusing. We're going to discuss releasing trapped emotion and how important it is to move it and how to move it by moving. And another set topic called Love and the Expanded Heart. This is exciting because it's relatively new information in the form that it's coming through here about the importance of the heart chakra. I've touched on it before in dealing with the chakra calls, but this had some more meat drop in today. Then finally, we're going to look at the power of breath, tears, and flow, especially in use with the emotions, and then invite us all to be vulnerable. By leaping out of the comfort zone. Without our emotions, essentially we are kind of running on empty, just to be honest about it. Sure, we can have an intellectual life and a good mind, and we can make sense of things and all of that, but we're not feeling any of it. And if you ever read one of the great old books, I think it was either Atlas Shrugged or The Fountainhead, there was a talk about grokking something. To grok it is to fully get it, to fully experience it on all levels. And without emotion, we just don't grok what happens. Because we don't have the visceral component. We don't have the sensation, the feeling, the flow of that emotion of how it is peaked, it moves, it has a life of its own for as long as it does, which is usually not longer than we're afraid of, and then it releases itself, and then we have that sweet and golden moment on the other side of that release where we are in a very, very powerful and perfect and receptive state. And then life flows and does its own thing again, or we flow and do our own thing again. These are potent times because what is occurring, and I'll get into this a little more on one of the topics, is that the energy is really impacting us and really impacting our emotional selves and the resistances that have been in the way of us allowing emotion. Surely we all can understand our own personal resistance to feeling because of what we're perceiving as painful moments. And what we're saying are things we don't want to feel again. And so we have made decisions, really as a culture, and in some ways as a humanity, that to feel is to be risking being in pain again. And that's something we don't want to do. The cost of doing that is that we pretty much are numb. And for the longest time in growing up in the 50s, numbness was what was happening. Because everything was black and white, even the TV. And so ultimately, feeling was not something that was really talked about much. It was not demonstrated. It was not shown. The only one that was relatively accessible, as we'll see, was grieving. But that was couched within its own sort of limited framework of how it was supposed to be done and how long it could go on before people grew impatient around you. And out of that black and whiteness, I remember feeling in many times, and I'm actually using the word feeling because I'm a very, very strong feeling being. I knew I always was, but there was really nowhere to put it, and especially nowhere to have a language of expression of it. So I sat on it, and I learned to be very discerning in my own mind, whether it was realistic or not in the outside world was debatable. But I learned to become discerning of what was going on around me, and I was able to pick up energies and feel things from people. But then, for better or worse, often both, I would make decisions of how to be in the world based upon what I was picking up. Very little validation, but it was a decision to survive. And in the world of the little child, survival is the main thing. The interesting thing is that for all of us, as we sit here in the form of who we are in these times, right now, we are a collection of those multiple decisions made over the years, mostly before we even reached 7 years of age, primarily even before we were 4, 3, and 2. How to survive, how to be present, and then how to play that out in the world to get what we want, which is to be witnessed, loved, accepted for who we are. The conflict, and out of the range of the awareness of that inner child self at that time, and pretty much through even up till now, is they did not see the cost of that protection. And the protection itself and the patterns that had become so familiar and so much like just who we are the very elements that interfere with us experiencing life to the depth and the dimension that we are, one, capable of doing, two, desirous of, and three, in a yearning place for, although hesitant because of those unnamed fears that keep holding us back. So, is it possible that just by becoming emotionally literate, by becoming able to actually feel again all of the emotions that we have, at least the very basic ones, without all the variety of labels that are put on it, that we can have a richer, juicier, and fuller life? Well, yes, it is. Yes, it is. And part of tonight's experience is to jumpstart some of those elements that have been hesitant and resistant, to speak the words and to make the names and to call forth the energies within you that are waiting for this moment to release their flavored burst information into you that will soften the misunderstanding about how your emotions are in your life. That's a big charge to do in an hour and 15 minutes now. But I really have great faith that the energies that are pouring into each of us collectively, as well as what's happening here at this end of the phone, is going to be enough to make some very, very powerful things happen. And I think when you see the page, when I send it out tomorrow or at the least by Thursday, a couple pictures of some kids in here, their expressions are pretty amazing. And I just sit and look at these things while I talk to you. Now, I have to own that I am in the sixth day of a juice fast, or a juice cleanse, or a juice experience, or an alternate way of ingesting and nurturing myself. So I am in a sense as high as a kite. I feel so clearer, much clearer. And at the same time, I'm stumbling around in my body a little bit as I make adjustments to these things. So on one hand, that part of me is not responsible for anything that comes out tonight. On the other hand, I'm anticipating some great clarity. So I just wanted to let you know that. So I ask, what is the nature of emotion on the first page here? And I say emotion, it's the juice of life. It's a primary feature of the earthly dimension, the reason galactic beings are lined up to incarnate into this land of tears and laughs and all the in-between. The waves of passion, the explosion of laughter, the sweeping overwhelm of fear, the gripping sensation of grief, the liquid sadness, the flood of adrenaline, these are just a small portion of the range of what can be in this fluid world of emotion. Emotion has been called energy in motion. As a cosmic force, it enters in purity through the backside of the sacral chakra. It is transmuted into the variety of feelings by circumstance and choice, at least in the beginning. Emotion moves. It is a designed flow of stimulus, expression, release, and refill. It has a process to it. And this is the design of our energetic and physical being. This is what we showed up with. Without an owner's manual, with the invitation to figure it out and to reclaim all that we are capable of doing. There's some relatively, I'll just say, scientifically insubstantiated things that I've just said there. The idea of emotion coming in through the back of the sacral chakra is very, very new and comes from the work of a woman named Cindy Dale, who I refer to very often as she works with the energy bodies and the chakras, et cetera, et cetera. I trust her implicitly because it really resonates with me, the information that she shares. So I talk about this as if it is the gospel, and as far as I'm concerned, why not? Why not? So you begin to realize that as that energy moves in through the back, just the very awareness of that can bring a sensation at the lower back, and you can just tune right in to the point where that stuff comes in just by being aware of the fact that something's going on back there. And I do that right now. I'm doing it, and I'm feeling that, and it always shows up, and I use always on this because it consistently shows up at a specific place. For me, it's just a little tiny bit off-center from a vertebrae that I can't tell which it is because I don't have numbers on them, but I think it's L4 or L5, right in there, directly behind the second chakra. Interesting. Open that up and allow yourself to be present with it and see what it delivers over time here. Unfortunately, too many have learned to interrupt the flow, the emotional cycle that leads to balance, and this has made, I'm sorry, let me say that again. Too many have learned to interrupt the flow, the emotional cycle that leads to balance, and this has made all the difference in this dimension, so much that this transition time into the age of Aquarius is in many ways a response to the inner chaos and crisis that has evolved in humanity, a cosmic intervention to give us back the keys to our original uncompromised vehicle that allow us to reboot into balance and beauty. I like the way that sounds. I like the way it rolls off the tongue, and I like the way it feels to me. It brings me joy. It brings me one of those emotions. It also puts in me a sense of wonder, which is not one of the emotions, but it's something that I really feel. Because it's new information that speaks to me on a deep level. And I'm all for this intervention, if indeed it's happening, that is inviting each of us to confront the so-called demons of our life, which are really just energetic residue remnants of spirit experiences that were unfulfilled in terms of being able to process fully. So we have a sense of what emotion is. So let's get into emotional literacy. To be literate is to be able to utilize the tools of language to communicate with one another. Schools are intended to teach the basics of reading, writing, and speaking to ensure a society that has the means to succeed according to its current standards. So we all know about being literate, and some people will lord over you with just how literate they are, how much book learning they've had, and how many facts they know. I know this New Age pass, and I have to be a testimonial person for this because I was a New Age guy, and I can slip into that now and then, maybe more than I realize. of having answers and information about all perceived events. In fact, when I went to college, I majored in liberal studies, which really basically said you had 5 minutes to talk about anything you wanted to, and you'd sound really very learned. But nothing beyond that, because he didn't have any substance to support any of that, which then led me to the opportunity to become a school teacher. As an elementary school teacher, my life was about sharing information and standing in front of the frequencies of these children as they walked in the door each day, each time re-stimulating my own capacity to be present with my inner child, who in those days was merely a kind of a dreamy wisp, something that I had become aware of during the early years of teaching, but not enough to see what was happening before me. But in my process of working with those kids in an attempt to support their literacy, it became essential for me, and I was drawn to materials that were about bringing emotion into the classroom. Blasphemy, I could hear. But I had the fortune to be at a school in a school district where the principal stayed out of the classroom most of the time. And I was at the end of the hallway. These were outdoor buildings of three. And at the end of the hallway, you could hear her walking down there if she came. And I had already made an arrangement with the kids that if we hear those footsteps and we see her coming with the yellow tablet, then we all knew what to do. We all knew how to really sit in our desks very straight and act like a really powerful lesson was going on. And we knew that the gift of that was that when she left feeling good about what was happening in room four, that then we could go back to really being connected with one another in the way that we were. We knew how to play the game. And I don't know if that was a lesson I was teaching the kids, because I haven't been in touch with most of them. But the realization is that I brought in emotion and feeling, and we talked often about what they were feeling. Little did I realize that what I was really doing was teaching myself about it and giving the opening the door so that I could begin to heal the things that I had tucked away. So my little boy was handling things there, much to my lack of awareness, but he was guiding me and bringing me towards a place where I would eventually find contact with him, like we did in, was it last week's lesson? Last week's session, where we connected with that inner child self. Emotional literacy is the capacity to know and understand the nature of, the use of, and the experience of emotion. It is the capacity to recognize the physical, personal sensations that show an emotion is active and moving. It is the capacity to identify the specific emotion and move with specific choices to facilitate its embrace, flow, and release. It is knowing how to be present with the emotion and communicate the experience with others who are involved or present. It is the capacity to appreciate the design and the movement of these surges of energy so unique to this plane. It is the active use of the tools to fully experience the depth of each of the primary emotions, joy, sorrow, fear, anger, and grief. So emotional literacy means I can identify, feel the senses, be aware of the sensations, know where they are located within my body, know with that information what kind of emotion is moving, know what to do to give it permission to move, and know how to assist its process, and know how to move it towards its eventual release, and then finally how to bring back in higher frequencies to take the place of what I had just released. That allows me to expand my experience in this dimension tenfold, a hundredfold, a lot. Emotional literacy is a primary skill necessary to navigate this dimension. It's one of the reasons we came here, right? But how important is it to current society? Before we go, just notice your body. Your awareness of your sensations is not only the contact of your inner child self, but it's the beginning indicator of an emotion that may be triggered and moving. You locate it. You notice what the actual sensations. You pinpoint where it is. You begin to ask for information about it in terms of what it is or what it has to share, or at the very least, get permission for it to move. So we can keep doing that throughout the course of the call. We are beginning to feel again, and it's like in The Wizard of Oz when the black and white turned to color. When the ability to feel starts to happen on a deeper level, and the sensations and the language that's coming from within is paid attention to, things kick in. It's not a transistor radio anymore. It's quadraphonic sound. It's not just a quiet drive in the night. It's the panorama of the Pacific Ocean looking at you as you are there at sunset. It's just everything exponentially increased. Schools do not address it unless you were in Mr. Welch's fourth grade class from 1977 to 1992, where it was an integral part of the daily activity. 450 children, give or take a few, were given tools that may or may not have made a difference in their lives, but at least they were given a foundation upon which to build when they woke up to the necessity of it to move through life with clarity. I was off in reverie thinking of and seeing the parade of faces of kids. That I had spent so much time with, and I, you know, all the stuff that they were going through at those points in time, as the families and the forms of life shifted for those families, and the kids came in with that yearning and that desire to feel a deeper connection, but also afraid of the educational process and all the things that happened in relationships and between kids and all of that. And so it's easy to feel that. That rich, deep presence of every one of them. And, I say, I don't know what happened to them because I don't physically. I mean, I don't know. I haven't kept track of them. But I know it by that feeling I just had. And, in fact, I probably said on at least one of the calls about a fellow in a church that I was playing here came up to me and he said, Mr. Welch. I went, hi. And he said, you probably don't remember me. And I go, no, I don't. And he said, I'm Stan Packer. And immediately when I heard Stan Packer, I thought of second grade when I was teaching there, and it was a boy that had so much energy. He was just vibrant all the time, and he couldn't contain it. And he was being forced to contain it, but by the grace of God, I guess, he came to my classroom, and he just always was up on his desk. He just had to be up there. It probably felt great. And I said, fine. I'll just put you in the back of the room so you're not blocking anybody. So, do what you got to do. And if we need to get your attention, then give me that. And I think for the first time in that setting, he was witnessed as having the energy that he did. And he came up to me as an adult with children and said, I never got a chance to thank you. He said, but the very fact that you were willing to let me lay on and sit on and stand on my desk, it made all the difference to me, and I felt so good being there, and it helped me so much. Wow, what a blessing that was to hear that from this young man. So we went off into another land there, but back to our topic for the night in another way. Culturally, emotions are tolerated at best. Women are classed as emotional and weak, while men traditionally are ostracized if they show weakness through the expression of emotion. We're taught to tough it out, keep a stiff upper lip, keep in control. People are said to break down, fall apart, lose their mind. One of the most beautiful elements of life is being squelched and restricted and discouraged by societal pressure. The very thing that is the fuel for more emotional energy rising to express. Can you see a problem here? It's just this paradox. Every one of us knows what feeling is and the depth of the truth of what it is and how it must flow. And yet we have been told and programmed and encouraged and bought into the idea that we have to sit on it, and we became afraid of it. And we'll see why we've become afraid of it. The repression is an energetic time bomb that compromises and eventually disintegrates tissue through significant diseases and chronic conditions, which then, in the wisdom of the establishment, further stuff with pharmaceuticals. That was tongue-in-cheek, that the wisdom of the establishment further stuffs that energy with pharmaceuticals to keep them even and normal. In other words, do not feel. Because then you would become dissatisfied with the way things are and move to initiate personal change, which could likely stir the apple cart and disrupt the carefully programmed sheep. Emotional literacy? Forget about it. I know you get what I'm saying. So up until now, the vibration of the new times is all about, up until now that's occurred, these vibrations in the new times are about stirring the pot, releasing the toxic reservoirs of unexpressed emotion in waves of energy. Not a person on this planet can escape the stirring of that residue, and many have followed new thought paths, ascension paths, to be open to the idea and have made phenomenal headway in becoming emotionally literate. Too many have not, and they are feeling the building of the pressure to get clear, to let go, and the forms are beginning to crumble and shatter. The very institutions that kept the straitjacket on the masses are teetering, soon to become outmoded by a higher frequency replacement already in the works. It's a great time to be alive. It's a great time to be fully alive. And as the native cultures would say, it is a good day to die. It is a good day to die to the old ways. So let's look at the basics. Pure emotional energy is dispensed into the five basics: joy, sorrow, fear, anger, and grief. And there's a whole range of variation that these energies can be diluted into. For example, there's a place that you can click over underneath one young boy who's just got the most best face. And it's a comprehensive list of emotions and the permutations. And it is from a guy named Tom Drummond up in North Seattle Community College. Never met him, but I found it on the internet. Of course I did. Under happiness, you have these variations. Delighted, ebullient. That's a word I just don't use. Ebullient, I think that's the way it's pronounced. Ecstatic, elated, energetic, enthusiastic, euphoric, excited, exhilarated, overjoyed, thrilled, tickled pink, turned on, vibrant, and zippy. Those all indicate happiness, intense happiness, kind of medium happiness, aglow, buoyant, cheerful, elevated, gleeful, happy, in high spirits, jovial, lighthearted, lively, merry, riding high, sparkling, up, and then really kind of, happy, contented, cool, fine, genial, glad, gratified, keen, pleasant, pleased, satisfied, serene, and sunny. This is the language where all these variations of feeling have been given these beautiful words, and in some ways they've just become beautiful words that hint towards a feeling that many of us have lost. Until now, back to the basics. All the variations typically can be broken down to these five. Each one has certain body symptomologies and specific locations where they show up in the physical and energetic bodies. Each aligns fairly consistently with one of the body in-body chakras. So we shall briefly explore each and with some characteristics with the intention of expanding your personal awareness to be able to notice and respond when and if they arise. So the first is joy, and honestly, joy is not an emotion that we dissect to understand. We simply enjoy the experience of it. Having said that, it brings a sweeping feeling of lightness and raises our frequency and mood to a positive, higher vibration place. Laughter, smiles, animation, and childlike spirit exemplify its presence. Well, you know, as I think, it is important to express what joy feels like. Because there are more than we realize, and maybe even on this call tonight, where you've lost your connection with that. And you can hardly identify when it's there. So this is critical that we start here in this place. Our laughter, smiles, okay, it helps us to feel solid. Okay, it's based in the second chakra. Think belly laugh. but it infiltrates others. It helps us to feel solid and grounded and connected in the root. When we are in joy, we walk differently. We connect with the earth, and we can feel the support because we get out of our own way, and our boundaries relax and quit resisting letting energy in. We attract a higher vibration energy. It activates us and assists us in taking action. That's the solar plexus quality. Often, joy opens one's heart and creates loving, connected feelings that are inclusive of others. In a joyful state, people will put their hands around one another and high-five one another when they're all happy together. Perfect strangers that, given a different circumstance, wouldn't give one another an eye contact. And yet, here we are, doing it. It's verbal and helps to release pent-up energy with the variations of tone and laughter. Ha ha! Ho ho! All those different sounds and tones put it in a different place within the body itself. It's moving energy as we laugh. That's why the laughing yoga has come around. And these opportunities to just gather in the spirit of joy to let that healing vibration of just being in the higher frequency of joy cleanse and clear out old residue. Joy happens more frequently when we are open, balanced, and inclusive of life. It is infectious. It triggers endorphins and leaves one feeling clean. Joy is a natural state of the child. When we are joy-filled, we often get silly. Most don't analyze why they're having joy, but most would like to bring more of it into their life. Let's move on to sorrow. We're just laying groundwork right here. You know, as I speak each one of these, and I'm giving this bit of information about them, just put yourself in that state. You can listen and also invite yourself to turn into that state. If you were in a joyful state, what specifically would be happening for you? Because each of us has a signature of emotion, in a sense. We have a frequency and sort of symptomologies and characteristics of us when we are in that emotion. And this is part of the literacy. This is part of beginning to pay attention so that I can go, wow, I am feeling joy. Because like I said, some people are so down and overwhelmed that they have no idea. And another element of joy that I just realized is the Buddhist perspective on the inner smile. See, a smile involves, I don't know the perfect number, but a whole lot of facial muscles. In fact, most of them. It is one of the most fully engaged facial gestures we can give out. The inner smile is to go to the back of the throat and imagine that you are smiling. And the inner smile at the back of the throat is like a little bit of a crescent moon that is shaped like a smile that invites us to be in the state of bliss and happiness. And that in itself, from that focus, begins to descend down into the tissues and down into the body, into the lower chakras, to disperse that vibrational intention, the inner smile. What a beautiful thing. And how often, this is already opening up here. You think of, I think it's Norman Sheehy, about the power of laughter. Laughter is the best medicine. I think that was the book where people who were in bad shape were force-fed comedies, and they ended up laughing themselves back into wholeness or back into a state of greater health. This is not something to laugh at. Okay, it's very true. Sorrow. Sadness is mostly a heart chakra issue, triggered by loss, unexpected changes, disappointments, or abuse. It involves all the chakras below it in varying degrees. Physically, the sensations are in the belly, the chest, behind the eyes, in the throat, and can be overwhelming. The voice sounds in a downward arc. The shoulders slump, and one can whine or cry to make groaning sounds, depending on the severity or the unexpectedness of the loss. Crying is a sign of sorrow. The cleansing capacity of tears is perfect with this emotion. They wash away the sense of loss. They wash away the sense of overwhelm. They wash away the hopelessness. Tears also trigger untapped reservoirs of loss and frustration and personal disappointments, etc., often leading to deeper, more lengthy releases than the current situation might call for. You've had those cries, like they kick into third gear. It is a little sob, and then it starts to deepen a little bit, drips down, it drops down below the throat, gets into the chest a little bit, and it starts to come up a little more, it starts to be a little more deepy sobbing, and then all of a sudden it's as if the whole lower part opens up and this energy just flows out, and it just kicks in. I know you felt that. It usually is triggered by a pretty significant shift or change or loss or something like that. It doesn't have to be, and that's what we have to realize from this, is that these tears do not have to be triggered by an event. We can support the process of using them to cleanse and clear in a very conscious way. One seeks comfort and touch and support when sorrow strikes. The eyes are droopy and the corners of the mouth sag. The world feels heavy. It moves slowly in release because the energy of sorrow moves slowly in release because it is often manipulated by thoughts and patterns, attention, self-pity, and the triggered release of an energetic reservoir. What I'm saying here is to realize that there's a duration for emotion. Some of them are very fast moving, and some of them just sort of plod along. They have different arenas, different doorways to go through, different rooms to walk into, where the vibration is subtly different, but it's all part of the cleanse. And this is the rich panorama of possibility with emotion, because none of the emotions of these basic ones are the same. They don't even have similar characteristics in many ways because they are felt differently. And the uniqueness of them is what gives them the unmistakable flavor. And it moves slowly. And to realize that there's a time frame to it and a process. And sorrow is one of those, because sorrow has to dig really deep. It goes into the very tissues themselves more so than several of the other. Grief is another, but it is also an assimilation of all of the emotions combined. But sorrow invites us to really feel. And so we settle into that place, and information, old energies, energetic memories, the losses come to mind, the releases happen, and they move through. And it's interfered with because of the need to cry, or the need to reflect, or the need to remember, or the need to resist. And so it has its own story. Crying actually feels good when it's over. And I mean that. I love in the process of crying. I grew up in a house where it said you have to earn the right to cry. That was the word. You might as well have a sign on the front door. All those who enter must earn the right to cry. And it's like, as a kid, I said, what? If we had WTF back then, I would have been using that all the time. I had no idea what my mother meant by that. But to her, it was the gospel. And what that meant was that we were not able to express any of that in the house. Her own wounding invited and demanded that her house and her children would have nothing but joy. You know, you might want to think you won the lottery by incarnating into that. But you and I both know that it is not all about always being in joy in this land of polarity. It literally gave me nothing to do with anything that wasn't happy, happy, happy. I learned big lessons during those times. One, as I learned to cry out of spite. And I would cry just because I was told not to. You know how great kids are with that. So allowing sadness can be very cleansing for all the energy bodies. Let's move to fear. A classic second chakra emotion, fear is the most pervasive of the emotions of this plane, not because there is a lot to be afraid of, but because we have been taught to fear. A useful emotion that uses heightened awareness to ward off threats, danger, and potential harm, fear is a constant companion for many in this culture and in the world. It involves the kidneys. It resides in the deep viscera of the lower belly. Fear incapacitates and immobilizes. It can be accompanied by thoughts of terror, cold sweats, urges to run away, sweaty palms, facial cleansing, wide eyes, high-pitched mournful sounds, screams, and a need to survive at all costs. Taxing the adrenals and impacting the kidneys, fear leaves one feeling separate, unprotected, childlike, and weak. It precipitates unrealistic thoughts, feels like anxiety in that the tissue buzzes, tingles, contracts, etc., and stresses the whole body to question the capacity for survival. In a society replete with violence, war, threats of annihilation, loss of work, money challenges, relationship problems, the future, terrorists, global warming, on and on, where insurance companies remind us over and over that catastrophe is just around the corner, where doctors threaten us with the panorama of diseases and side effects from the cures they prescribe, where lawyers salivate to take what you have, where the police and the judicial system control our moves and freedom and watch over us 24/7 with surveillance, where our death waits just down the road. This is what seeds the fear. No wonder most of humanity is afraid. The pressure is too much, and the stress of handling it all contributes to heart attacks, strokes, suicides, and more. Fear is diminished. And here's the way out, by getting clear on the facts. We all remember the phrase, "Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain," in The Wizard of Oz. The truth in those words is that fear, primarily, except in moments of grave danger, where physical danger is imminent, is merely a facade, an illusion of triggered memories of unprocessed energies that are feeding that moment. Imagined results are one of the tools of fearful energy. Okay, I was just rereading that. One of the great things we use against ourselves is fearing the future. Or I learned as a boy, like I said, to fill in blanks and then act as if I knew the gospel until further notice. And usually no further notice came, so I just lived as if I decided and knew what was going on. Sometimes that was accurate. More often than not, it wasn't. But imagined results keeps us stuck, because we don't want to risk having that happen. Fear is a mighty attractant in the cosmic interplay of abundance and prosperity. Fear distracts and debilitates, contributes to ulcers, heart attacks, brain disease, nervous system disorders, rashes, paranoia, etc. Balanced fear is a force in alignment with the situation. Okay, hear what I'm saying on that. I just took us out of all the things that can go wrong and then realize that when we step into balance with fear, we realize that it is directly in relationship to the situation that faces us. But so often what happens, because again, we have so much unprocessed emotion from our years of living, that all of a sudden the button is pushed and everything of its similarity rushes down the corridor and jumps off the stairwell to be a part of this release. And it just is overwhelming. It moves through observation and inner permission to clear out fairly quickly. Okay, let's realize that. Fear moves very quickly, although residue hangs around. The fearful moment is a passing moment. It is as long as the chemical reaction within the body to fight or flight goes on, which ain't that long. By gaining our capacity to observe and having the inner permission to clear out, we can support the movement of it very quickly. And usually that happens unless life keeps re-stimulating it. So cleaning the reservoir of fear unexpressed is a priority for humans everywhere. And let me pass on a really powerful tool for you right now. It's called the frontal occipital hold. And this is strictly energy dynamics. When you are in a state of overwhelm, when you are feeling like stuff is caving in on you, when you feel separate, when you feel like you're about ready to go out of body, when you can't think clearly, then one thing you can do is you use both your hands. You take one hand and you put it on your forehead. You take the other hand around behind and you cup what's the occipital lobe, which is basically where the head and the neck connect. You've got a little nub back there. This is the place of the medulla oblongata. And when you put one hand in the front and one hand in the back, what you're doing is you're balancing the hemispheres of the brain, not the hemispheres, but the front and back, the various components of it. Essentially, the backside is a reptilian brain. Fear works with a reptilian brain because that's part of the programming historically. The reptilian brain causes everything else to shut off, and basically you decide how it's going to work out that I can get out of this mess. That's the backside. The frontal lobe is basically where rationalization takes place and the capacity to actually be able to discern possible solutions for the dilemma that I'm in. So by putting one hand in the front and one hand in the back, touching, you know, holding on to those places and breathing with it for up to 1 minute or more, you can reestablish a place of equilibrium for yourself where you get yourself back into balance. In other words, the reptilian brain begins to soften its need to control, and then the frontal lobe begins to take over and allow us to be able to use rationalization and clear thinking to be able to, you know, deal with what's up. It's called the frontal occipital hold. I'll make sure that I didn't even put it in here, and I just realized that's one. Okay, let's move on to anger. God, finally. Anger is a solar plexus issue, a matter of power repressed. As a mask emotion, now hear what I'm saying, it's a mask. Anger typically has something underneath it that is triggering the reason for being angry. Anger is a protective, controlling kind of vibration that really allows us to deal with a situation, especially if we're in fight or flight, and we choose fight. That's where anger comes in. You got to visualize Popeye and the spinach, if you remember that cartoon. When Popeye was confronting Brutus, what he would do is pop the spinach, and he'd suck it through his pipe. I don't know how he ever did that, but he did it. And then you could see the surge of spinach, a.k.a. adrenaline, moving through his arm to become Joe Palooka and bop old Brutus and save olive oil from the grasp of this evildoer. What a perfect allegory and metaphor and visual for how anger moves and works. The adrenaline surge that is squeezed out of those two little organs in the upper part of her back laying on top of the kidneys is incredibly amazing. What a capacity. If you could harness that, God, what could you do? Well, you could be the woman who comes out in the garage and her husband's jack has fallen, the car is on him. The woman takes a few deep breaths and goes and picks up the car while he rolls out from it. That's adrenaline showing us our capacities. In a sense, that's anger used in a constructive way. Most often, it's not used in that way. It's a mask emotion, and usually something underneath the expression of anger, like a fear, a loss, a perception. Anger floods through the viscera like spinach, like I just said. It's a fast and vigorous, blinding and consuming, and is impacted mightily by storehousing it. You keep holding on to anger, and then pretty soon you've got your crime of passion right in front of you. I did not know what I was doing. It's a legitimate defense because of the wash that takes place, the blinding wash of anger that takes away any connection with rationalization and is really just a matter of pushing and shoving. I was consumed by anger, not to the point that I would act upon it. Fortunately, I had football, and I was a beast on the football field to the point that I got all kinds of awards and was celebrated because I was just so good at it. And at the end of the game, I was team captain, and at the end of the game, we'd sing the school hymn, and on the other side of that experience, it was so intense, I would be sobbing. But because I was team captain, nobody said anything, and it was acceptable. Right as we stood in front of the whole crowd singing the school hymn at the end of the game, I'd be sobbing. I had no idea what it was, but I sure didn't stop it because I learned as you recall, that you have to earn the right to cry. And damn it, I earned the right to cry after all that I went through in that 60 minutes. Crimes of passion, blinding rage, and losing control. Anger is first felt in the solar plexus, and not in the stomach. It creates heat, and it feels like it's moving through the tissues, especially the extremities. One feels activated, intense, physical, and wants to strike out to defend and harm and destroy. It's loud, explosive, and filled with deep-bodied sounds. Anger is fed by the reservoir of injustice, criticism, disappointment, manipulations, yellings, and punishments that have been perpetrated upon us by our moments of living up until now. Moments of anger trigger the reservoir to release as the body is attempting to clear the field. Anger is everywhere, but okay, let's start a new section here. Get a sense of that. Notice in yourself where anger does its dance, if you even allow it. So many are so out of touch with allowing anger. I knew that if I ever let anger out as I got older, that I could possibly kill. I knew it. And I didn't understand it until the point when I actually understood what it was I was so angry about. But I recall being in a relationship with a woman who was fairly petite. And she got in my face about something, and I didn't even know what it was. And I reached my arm out to protect myself as she was coming at me. And I pushed her a little bit, and she fell to the floor and dislocated her shoulder. And I hardly did anything. But what that did at that point in time was it pushed anger so far down in me that I would never find it. Because I was so frightened, it was like, see what you can do? And I wasn't, you know, my higher self and the greater being that I knew I was, a good person in the world, wouldn't allow me to go there. But the irony is, that's the place I had to go, but not in that way. And thus, we're looking at emotional literacy here. Anger is everywhere, but often couched in socially acceptable guises, in wit, just kidding, sarcasm, criticisms, advice, etc. Anger is activated by the violence in our world. The movies, the TV shows, the news, the real world injustices, the inequalities are all dripping with backdoor expressions of anger. The acceptable violence and the killing shown and reported in the media support the inappropriate expression of anger. Programs are all about controlling it rather than working with the safe release of the visceral force. There must be an outlet for anger to be released safely, like a pressure cooker. We have to realize the process that has gone on to keep these forces within us. For society says it's not okay to be angry, but at the same time gives us lots to be angry about and gives us no tools to release it. And when we do release it, puts us in jail for daring to do such a thing. There's some stuff that's seriously wrong here. And that's what these times are shifting and changing. The very fear of anger and these emotions has created the very limitations that have been put upon us to keep things tight and protected. This is the greater irony of the whole thing. In an attempt to create a safe society, we've restricted the very things that would create a peaceful society itself, which is the honest and clear release of emotion. The forms of the world create varying degrees of anger in people. Most have learned to stuff it. The existence and intensity of sporting events is actually a productive way to release the stress that feeds anger, to yell the words and sounds of frustration and helplessness, collectively feel the energetic intensity that supports release, all productive unless they go too far and become violent, as many do. The force of anger creates action and produces results and change, which can be positive and negative. What is most important is to recognize anger and have safe ways to move and release the energy, which is what we're coming to. And finally, the other basic emotion of grief, it's actually a combination of all the others. As I said, it's triggered by the unexpected loss and significant change, or significant change. It moves in stages and through stages. Each involves one or more of the other basic emotions. The shock of the event can be numbing, often very vocal and animated, as the inner doors of companion losses are thrown wide open to feed a sweeping wave of energy that clears out a whole lot of debris. When we allow that angst of a moment where we are forced to grieve over a loss and we allow it to flow, we are doing some mighty powerful work on the inside in terms of clearing ourselves out. In fact, uncivilized cultures use someone who's designated, usually a woman, as one who does the keening. And the keening is the process of one who does the grieving for the culture or for the tribe. They make the sounds, and you hear them, and they go on until they don't feel the energy of the collective anymore. And obviously they have to be replaced a little bit by substitute keeners. But you hear what I'm saying. Other cultures have provided, the less civilized cultures and more less refined cultures have allowed their connection with their visceral self to be active and allowed themselves to process and release. Okay, the initial flood leads to then disbelief and denial. It's also a time of numbness and unacceptability. Next, sadness arises, the anguish of the loss, the separation anxiety, the sense of helplessness, and tears will cleanse and wash the debris. And too often, these are curtailed, which is a huge disservice to the process of actually allowing grief to take place. Then comes the rage about the loss, the helplessness to do anything to stop it. Fear reveals itself next as one is feeling lost and does know what they will do, how life will be without the person, the thing. The unknown shows itself. The changes that must take place begin to reveal themselves, and the routines that were the compatible comforts are broken. And finally comes resolution in the form of acceptance. It's a lengthy journey through each element that must have time to be assimilated. Grief is felt in all the lower chakras. Its symptomologies are many, but they include the specific emotion ones already mentioned in the other emotions. Grief is accepted by society, but only for so long. Soon it's get over it. There's nothing you can do about it. Time to move on. Let it go. They soon flood the senses from those around who have grown impatient with your self-pity. Mainly because it triggers their own reservoir of unexpressed toxicity. We have basic emotions. What do we do with them? The most profound thing we can do is to move our bodies. And I say this with all sincerity. In the South, in some of the Latin cultures, they have, there was a song by Sting, right now I'm forgetting the title, but They Dance Alone, it was called. When the wives and daughters of the men who were killed in atrocities by gangs, whatever, drug lords, etc., they would be allowed to come to the claiming of the bodies. They could not touch them, but they were allowed to dance. And they danced. They would dance the loss, and they would dance it for hours until they felt it no more. And the beauty of the dance is that it gave permission for everyone to feel around it. And the potency of that action, as it was profoundly effective in a vibrational level, much more widespread than they can even imagine. Movement. When I went through something in the last couple years to deal with some of the deeper issues that I had known were there and had worked with, but seemed to have reached a place where I had a cap on them, I found a process called a somatic experience, and it was under the guise of a woman who was doing a Tibetan cranial, which was working with the cerebrospinal fluid, and et cetera, and then working with the various plates in the cranium to follow the subtle pulses to allow certain shifts to take place within the body itself. It was powerful and beautiful work. And I got really high after the session. I walked out feeling like I was stoned, and I went, wow, that was cool. But she mentioned something there about trauma in our conversation afterwards when I was just sort of coming down from that. And she said she did some trauma work, and it was called somatic conditioning or somatic experience. And it piqued my interest. I called her 2 weeks later and said, I really want to do that with you. And what I found out through that process was pretty amazing. I already knew the body held on to the energetic past, but this gave me actual verifiable evidence that that was so. I would come in and I'd sit down in the chair and we'd shoot the shit for a minute. Sorry for the French, but we would talk, find out, and she would look at my body and say, looks like you're holding something over there in that left shoulder. I went, what? And then I'd bring my attention to it. The next thing I know, something started, you know, the arm would start to move a little bit. She said, just go with it. So I would just stay witnessing, and pretty soon the arm and the movements would get larger. I'd be doing circles, and then I would be doing these gyrations and whatnot. And then she could say, slow it down, slow it down. So I would simply slow it down and let the movement go on. And the next thing I knew, it would stop, and then something else would show up around in my body, and I'd bring my attention to it, and I would follow these clues to reach a place of pretty deep release. And this call is not about all about that, because it was a pretty mighty experience, but what it gave me was the trust to know that my body is, one, willing to let go of that which I have held on to, and able to let go, too, and it just depends on my willingness to make the choice to let it happen. This is why paying attention to the viscera, the sensations within the body, are so incredibly important. Every moment does not have to be a somatic experience, but it can be in that the movements are releasing. And when we allow spontaneity within ourselves through a process of improvisational dance, we allow our movements to sort of do the moving themselves. If you are sitting there, and as you're sitting there right now, I invite you to stretch, say, one arm out. And what you're doing here, by stretching one arm out, you're following inner guidance to release something within the muscle tissue itself, within the cells of that area. Now, somewhere on the opposite side of your body, let it be a leg, an arm, an elbow, the head itself, create a counter movement that's just unique in itself. And then you have two movements that are going on separately here. And allow them to happen. They are organic, and they are following an inner wisdom that is giving permission for this to take place. And now, in one position, just hold your place with both arms, legs, whatever you're doing, stretched out, and hold the stretch for a moment and breathe into it. And then just release into that and let it go. And now find another part of your body to move a little bit. Let it start moving. Wherever you're directed, let it move. And then move slowly, and then let it hold a stretch. If it's a leg, you can stretch and feel it on the thigh, the inner thigh, the calf, the foot, outside, and the quad, and the hamstring in the back, wherever you want to, and hold that. Now, somewhere else on the counter side, do another move that is slow and is countering and stretching away from the movement you have already and the stretch you already have going. And allow this to happen. And if someone was witnessing from the outside, they'd see like a contorted person there. But that's irrelevant. What I'm saying is you're allowing yourself and the wisdom of your body to clear out some junk. Okay, release that. Movement is a primary tool to release emotion. Trapped emotion, that is. It is a vehicle that will clear the tissues. This is why dancing is so important. And we're talking about just put the music on and boogie. We're not saying learn the steps. Because you know that once it becomes right or left, right brain, whatever, okay, whatever brain it is, it says you have to learn the steps, we're out of the dance and we're just doing what we're told to do to be acceptable. Put the music on and move. And I don't care if you're bedridden, you can move in bed, you can move something. Do it on your own. Allow movement to be a part of you. Make it a real part of you. Oh. Okay, very quickly here. Some suggestions for each emotion and how to let the energy move. Joy, don't worry, be happy. What else can you say? Well, you can laugh. You can do things you love doing. You can celebrate. You can get outside. on it goes. You can watch children. You can play with children. You can play like a child. You can fly a kite. Anything that brings you joy because you really like doing it. Watch a movie. I don't know if you're into the Marx Brothers humor or any of the current comics. Some of it's really funny. Some of it's just like, are you kidding? But hey, that's the beauty of discernment. With sadness, the real remedy for sadness, cry, cry, cry. Allow yourself to feel by focusing on the area of sensation and giving permission for the energy to move. When you cry, there are certain areas within the body that are also talking because they are feeding the tears themselves. It is for the source of those tears in that particular moment. You bring your conscious attention as you allow the tears to flow, and you bring it to that place, and you give the permission for it to go. You might get information from that place. You might get nothing except more support for the tears to kick in perhaps a higher gear. Acknowledge the loss and the source of the sadness if it comes up. You may already know what it is. If you've been left behind, if you've changed something, if something has happened and you know exactly what it is, don't dance around it. Call it for what it is. It's okay to be sad. It's okay to have feelings. It's okay to feel abandoned, left behind, unsupported. Set up a gestalt activity where you actually dialogue with the loss. It's a little more heady, but it does lead to some emotional and some beautiful results. Get speaking to activate the movement through the stuckness. You can always comfort your inner child. Remind yourself that you are there for you and always and in all ways. And did I mention cry? Facilitate sadness when you know it's there. Facilitate joy when you know it's there. And then it kicks into an exponential experience and release. Joy doesn't need to be released in the sense that there's a residue of it. It is a wellspring that bubbles up from the point of the source of the cosmos. It is there always when we call upon it. But it's the other stuff that gets in the way. For fear, number one is own the fear. In other words, I feel afraid. And using language like I feel instead of I am afraid, I am scared. We know in manifestation language and the capacity of us to make manifest through the laws of the cosmos that when we say I am something, the universe is going to give everything it can to support that belief. So getting used to say I feel, and the feeling language is accompanied by I feel. And when you can begin to bring that in and your first expressions of it and name it, it is a very powerful first step. And it, in fact, is one of it's the most critical step because without recognizing it, it becomes a wash of energy, which in some cases is fine. Own the fear. Explore its parameters to get familiar with the facts of the fear. Because fear fades when facts are faced, when the curtain is pulled back to reveal the illusory nature of what has imprisoned us, then we realize there wasn't much to be afraid of. Oh, is that all there is? Wow, I feel better. To explore the demon itself, to look at all parameters around it, to look around the backside and see the little kid with a hand puppet, go, just kidding. Notice the sensations of the body. Well, say, wait, you know the sounds. Okay, wait a minute. Shake and make sounds. When you feel fear, and if you shake your body, it is a natural response to fear, and it pushes the fear and moves it more quickly out of you. You know the sounds of fear. You hear them all the time in movies. Screaming, etc., etc. Not that that's necessary. But depending on your situation, if you live in the desert, it's a wonderful thing to do on a regular basis. We're down at the seashore. Make the sounds. And let them move until they're complete. Sometimes just giving sound to the feeling, not even know what's coming out, just let it come. That is a potent release, and it's better than using words. Notice sensations in the body and dialogue with them, and invite them to tell you what they have to say. Use the connected breath, the circle breath, to support the movement of the fear energy And I've delineated that in here about the circle breath again, where you breathe in, you breathe out, you breathe in, you breathe out, with no pause between them. What that does is super oxygenate your system, brings in a lot of life force and chi, and it moves the emotion. It like puts it in little go-karts and moves it right out. Caution, it may lead to tears. Caution, it may need to lead to releasing. But isn't that the point? And grief, you feel it. Denial is a destroyer of grief and an invitation to the blues in the form of physical issues. Trust inner guidance and listen to the suggestions and do them. Cry. Own your feelings. Practice self-care and comfort. Cry. Acknowledge the loss. Have dialogues with the loss. Cry. Take walks. Take baths with bubbles. Use aromatherapy and candles. Cry. Be gentle and loving to yourself and reach out to others and talk about the feelings, the loss, the missing, the emptiness, and get a pet to have companionship with and express outward care. Make sure you're hydrated and eat nutritiously. Grief is a time of great extended sadness, and it's pierced and punctuated by times of anger and rage, absolute fear and terror of the future, moments of happiness where you just finally go, wow, what a great person they were, what a great situation, how much I miss them. All those elements are part of it, and it is a process. It is a greatest hits of emotion, and therefore it is, in a sense, the king of them all. Unfortunately, on some level, it is tied to loss or etc. But it is a beautiful way to feel the depth of this dimension, which, going back to the beginning, is why the beings are lined up to incarnate. Emotions are moving energy. You must allow the energy to move. And once you've done this, then you can engage in more pointed and mental exercises to further clear emotional debris. And I list here two different exercises that I've used very briefly. One, for example, I made a list of fears that I had in my life, including people that I felt fear around, situations that I had felt fear in, everything that I could possibly come up with and more. And once I made the list, I put it down for a while, walked away. Next day it came back, and I took one thing at a time, and I looked at it, and I read it out loud. And then I let the sound come up, whatever I wanted to have the sound on it. I said whatever I wanted to say, words that were spontaneous that would go with it. And I reached a point with each one of those that I would reach a point where I had nothing left to say about it. And to me, that's the golden moment. At that point, I said, I release you and set you free, or whatever dialogue you want to use. I cut the cord using the old Egyptian Huna process, Sakharap Na. Cut the energetic cord between me and that, and I said goodbye. I got up out of the chair and walked away. Had some water, did whatever I did, came back and did another one. I did it for 132 times. It's something to do. It's a process that I know works. I would go to the bank with it. It's explained in here. Another thing that I would do that was discovered out on the highways in the middle of the night as I drove across, you know, Utah trying to get to Denver. On XM radio, I tune in, you know, the 60s channel. And one night I was driving, I started to listen to the song and I started to feel things because I remembered the song when it came out. And it took me right back to when it came out. And I started crying about it. I had no idea what it was about, but I let it happen. And then the next song came out, and lo and behold, I was back somewhere else, and a brand new memory came in. And I started going and feeling certain elements of joy with it because it was such a pleasant memory. On and on it went for hours, where I just trusted the golden, you know, guidance of the radio to give me exactly what I needed to clear emotion. See, your higher self, as we've established, is always orchestrating your moments to bring you clarity, to bring you back to yourself, to give you back the truth of your being. And if we ignore them, then what are we doing? What are we doing? It's a spontaneous process, this evolution. No, it's not even an evolution, because that implies we have to change from from who we are. But no, it is the flow. That's what it is. We're just in this flow on this beautiful journey that keeps giving us opportunity to get clear about remembering who we are, and then using that to seed our moments and create the kind of life and experience that we not only desire but deserve. Let me talk about very quickly love in the expanding heart. The celestial frequencies integrating into the third dimensional earth plane are shifting the forms of things rapidly. New knowledge and understanding is being revealed on a daily basis to those with the openness to receive. But in fact, it is being received by all as well. The understanding of the chakra system, the energy bodies, the human design, the deeper capacities of our own vehicle are among the new forms being downloaded. And one of the most sweepingly relevant downloads is the nature of the heart chakra and the love vibration. Essentially, the center of our being is now the heart chakra, and I've established that in our phone calls earlier if you were on the chakra calls. The center itself is expanding to become the receptive and expressive center of our whole self, the host to the soul, and the receptor for the higher self guidance. It is a critical spot within us. Our internal focus is being redirected to the heart, bypassing the brain and the intellect, and rising from the sacral and plexus nerve bundle, which are considered the three places of consciousness within it, the brain center, the heart center, and the plexus and the sacral area in between there, where we get a gut feeling, where we get a gut idea. It comes from deep within us, where we feel it in our brain, where we feel it in the heart. The heart is the most reliable of all of them. And as to that, we are bringing and being guided to turn our consistent and, if you will, constant attention to. Our internal focus is being redirected to heart, bypassing intellect. Okay, all moments are being filtered through the ever-expanding love vibration that is introducing oneness and connection as foundations to the multidimensional revelation showering into and upon us. Once we tune into the heart and allow that energy to begin moving, what we then start to receive the higher love vibration, the foundational frequency upon which we are all not only designed, based, but fabricated. It's the very essence of creation itself that begins to flow into and through us. And that becomes the filter through which we live. Because pure emotional energy that arrives through the back of the sacral center is being redirected through the love frequency, greatly expanding the nature of each emotion. And as we begin to consciously send everything we feel through the heart area, we will begin to create a smoother, more profound relationship with our emotional design. Love softens all and imparts vibratory information to the energy itself, encoding it with relevant information to diffuse the intensity and allow the smooth release of the emotion. What did he just say? I have no idea. This just dropped in and was like, I couldn't keep fast enough. I wished I'd stayed in typing in high school, but I didn't. So I was hunting and pecking as fast as my two fingers would go. Let me look at that again, because in a sense, this is the critical element of this talk tonight, now that I remember that it came through. Love softens all and imparts vibratory information to the energy itself. The love frequency, as things wash through it, it transforms it into a different vibration that is more authentic and wider, and I don't even have the words for it. And it encodes it with relevant information to diffuse the intensity. And then that itself, with this new information infused into that emotional energy that has already been defined as anger, it allows it to smooth and then release the emotion. But then it infiltrates the emotional system to reframe the nature of how the emotion moves. Do you hear what I'm saying? Is we're on the brink of getting this whole new structure and form and capacity to handle and process emotion. It's like the original design. It's not the Rube Goldberg version that we've been working with that was designed by trial and error. It is going back to the original source and saying, this is how you were designed, little one, so let's call it to its place. By running through the heart, it is allowing us to redefine and reframe, that's the perfect word, how emotion moves through us. And I said, it sounds like it will begin to follow the original design and the intention of the dimension to enact our capacity to enjoy emotion and its rhythmic dance. Imagine that. No matter what the form of the emotion, we begin to find a sense of joy in the experience itself because we trust it. And knowing that the negative experiences, quote-unquote negative experience with our current emotional systems are based primarily on the excessive storage of the unexpressed, becoming clear and being clear will allow us to taste the delicious difference of each emotion in its fullness. We're being presented with a new model, I believe. And this is my experience and what I'm going to be, you know, really working with here. And I invite you to do the same. Currently, the heart chakra is the center between the seven in-body chakras. It is the gateway to above and below because it's number four. It's in between both. Keeping it open allows the movement of energy, vibration, information, and intention between the two, allowing the upper cosmic to seed the lower chakra, earth-based energetic material with higher frequencies, while allowing the foundation frequencies of the being that you are expressing as you, the I am that I am, it allows those to infiltrate into the upper realms. And then they are bathed in the light before they enter the dimension into form. So you see, by opening the heart, we allow the ebb and flow of the energies to come down and come up, and then they are washed and expressed and infused with light before they're expressed out into the world. It is a whole different thing that's coming down the pike here. Flash, news flash. Stay tuned. 6 days of no food. Okay, this sounds like it's how it's supposed to work for us before we end our free will, acquiescence, fear-based living, and compromise self-esteem through the monkey wrench in the works. You got to be okay with that. You got to realize that we effed up. You know, we did it with information that we trusted, and yet it was like, nice try, kid. But let me tell you what's really going on. And there it is, you know, this new information coming in. I invite you to not believe it just because I'm saying it or whatever, but feel it. Read it through and see where it resonates in you and see if you can begin to apply it to your moments, because the worst thing that'll happen is nothing. And we already know what nothing's about, and we already know what the same old is. Bottom line, emotional tending and striving to reach and maintain emotional literacy opens the door to the expansion of the heart chakra to let the higher frequency vibrations of pure love do its magnificent work. We must make moves in good faith to receive the special deliveries of the cosmic wisdom and grace. Do not sit idle, my dear one. You can go ahead and read about the power of breath, tears, and flow. But I'm going to conclude tonight with talking about vulnerability and leaping out of your comfort zone. This is a critical element of giving yourself freedom. Traditionally, being vulnerable was seen as being weak, capable of having your defenses overwhelmed, prone to getting hurt. Superman was invulnerable at a time when the world was at war. Being invincible was a quality that fit the times. No one wanted to be vulnerable, be a sissy. No offense, ladies. In this sense, vulnerable is a Piscean term that is paying attention to the outside projection onto the world, the persona we put out there, and no one wants to appear weak from that framework. Thus, the encouragement to act like a man and tough it out, as one way to say it. But all along in the hearts and souls of those dealing with that version, there was a deeper awareness, a calling, in fact, to become more transparent, that through an open heart and compassionate ways, we could become very powerful and popular beings, because everyone is looking for some reminder of their true inner design, and being open was felt, and it felt safe to others, so they want to hang out with you. Will you be my friend? Can I hang with you? Can I play with you? I just feel good being around you. That's what that energy is. Being vulnerable now means one is open. And that openness there is balance and center and power. The words ring true. One knows where they stand, one who is vulnerable. Because they allow and show and express their feelings, they are considered transparent, which is a really good thing. There are no energies to push people away or to confuse people. They can stand in your presence and be witnessed through your own wholeness and your transparency of your vulnerability to be called upon to reveal and release that very same thing within themselves. Vulnerability acts as the invitation to life. It removes the walls and barriers that keep people mystified and protective of themselves, so life begins to enter your field. In your clarity of vulnerability, you're able to stay in your power with well-maintained boundaries, and you can pick and choose what to let in the inner chambers. You show up for moments fully engaged. For entrusting life, you know you are well taken care of. This sounds like a bit like a contradiction where it allows you to pick and choose what you're going to let into your field. That's really just wisdom. That's not protection. It's keeping things out of you that you know are not going to be resonating in the vibration that you are. And your vulnerability allows you to see that which doesn't serve you. This openness creates opportunities for new awareness and experience. Riding the waves of discomfort, hesitation, and fear, you feel very alive in the moment. Do you hear that? You don't run away from emotion and vulnerability. You walk the edge of them, and you want to see what comes out of them. You want to see what walking on the edge of it will bring, because you're not afraid of those feelings anymore. You don't have this reservoir of angst that triggers every time you start to feel, which is what keeps most people stuck. Vulnerability is soft and pliable, flexible to the moment. It is cognizant. It's aware of the big picture because it feels willing to expand the playing field. Vulnerability is power. You feel life in you, respond honestly and integrity with the vibration, and witness the flow you find yourself in. Nothing is there to intentionally harm you. And this is discovered through allowing feelings to move freely, feeling them, allowing their natural process to take place, stepping outside of that place to be willing to be vulnerable in the new sense. And now your comfort zone, that well-earned citadel that defines your personal playing field, is actually a self-imposed prison. It limits the reaches of your potential experience. It keeps you from participating and justifies your familiar patterns and beliefs. It is quite literally a smokescreen that diverts you from the guidance and direction of your higher self. From the walls of your comfort zone, it's easy to justify choices, play small, pout, play victim, and blame the world, not get what you want, settle for less, wish and hope, give up, etc. So at the end of this call, I call upon your personal will-centered courage to step out of your comfort zone and, rather than be afraid, be vulnerable and watch how life shows up. You will be very glad you did such an outlandish thing. The comfort zone is so 2014. Emotional literacy was the purpose of tonight, to see that emotion is not something to run from, but something to completely embrace, to become so familiar with that you ride the flow of it in every moment of living. And as it comes up, it becomes an invitation to take a ride, not something that you run from. And the way that place is reached is by releasing the debris, by continuing to practice really powerful and beautiful self-care, nurturing that inner child connection, working with it to the point that that child and you are one and the same, and you're moving along together all the time. How's it going, buddy? Good. How you feeling? Great. Let's go. Let's do this. Feeling bad? Yeah. Feeling bad. Well, let's hang out for a while. It's like that. It's a movement. It's a way of life. So this concludes tonight's session. It also includes the first block of our monumental intention to have 28 of these sessions. So if you have been served by this, I invite you for the next 2 weeks. We will not be meeting. And I invite you during that time to decide whether you want to continue on with this or not. If you decide not to, I am blessed by the time that you have spent with me. I really hope, and actually I know, that some of this has served you mightily. And I invite you to use it in every moment that you can to really improve how life shows up for you and how you experience life through you. If you choose to go on, I will be sending some links tomorrow that I've already indicated in previous mailings to you that there will be specials on terms of what I'm offered since you've already participated. I invite you to, you know, to take the next block. Why not? And maybe you're so committed to this, you're going, I'm all in, man. And I'll go ahead and drop the $1 million it takes to finish it out. Oh, wait, but there's a special this week. So be that as it may, I have been privileged by the opportunity not only to serve you on these phone calls, to talk into this black thing, this box that I have here, knowing that there are people somewhere on the receiving end. But what it did mostly is gave me an opportunity to really open up to some new ideas that are coming through and put them into a form that makes sense. I hope you've been visiting the pages as I send them. Not only, I hope you've been listening. I know it's a lot to ask, but find time to go, at least go to the pages, experience the images that are there, see the support materials that are working for you. And please, in these 2 weeks in between, as you integrate all that we've gone through and maybe reflect upon it and decide whether you're going to continue, invite others to be a part of this because you've seen what it can do for you, I hope. I believe you have an experience now and things to call upon that you may not have had before we called. Before the calls. And we're going into some juicy areas here that are coming up. Accessing and applying cosmic law. Oh my God, really? Ascension. Understanding and embracing oneness. Breath, voice, and words. Self-nurturing. Being fully in body. The DNA revelation. I'm just sitting here going, my God, what am I going to say on these things? But I'll show up. And I invite you to do the same. I'm here on the phone for a few more minutes if you have any comments, questions, and things. Otherwise, I will download the recording and get it out to you within by Thursday. Thank you, thank you, thank you so much.
Hi, Mark. This is Kimberly from Washington.
Hi there.
Hi.
What's up?
I just want to say how much I have enjoyed this first block of classes. The things that you are teaching are amazing and beautiful, and I intend to actually go through the whole course because I can't stop now. And I want to thank you so much for all the hard work that you put into this. The support pages are amazing.
Oh, God.
And I really appreciate you and all that you do for these classes. And I hear that you're coming up this way in June, and I will see you then. I intend to be present for the event.
Okay. Yay. I'm just all aflutter with your words. Thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank
you. You are so welcome.
All right. Well, you enjoy these 2 weeks, okay?
Okay.
All right. Blessings.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Hi, Mark.
Hi.
Hi, this is Brenda.
Hi, Brenda.
I just wanted to say thank you. I appreciate and enjoy your style. So thanks for sharing with us all the stuff you do and in the way that you do.
Well, you were very, very welcome. And thanks for being a participant in this and showing up.
Oh, you're welcome.
Amen.
All right.
Enjoy.
Good night.
All right. Good
Thank
night
you.
To you. Anyone else? It isn't just praise me time, but I'll tell you, that sure feels nice. But if you have questions, anything about anything we've done so far, questions about these the upcoming stuff, any of that, I'll give it another breath or two. Bueller?
Hey, Mark. Susan.
Hey, Susan.
My understanding is we're not having a session on Thursday because this is the break between...
Right. That was number... Yeah, yeah. Okay, I'll send you an email,
because,
okay?
Or because we've missed so many, we're just going to plow on. Anyway, let me know, okay?
I will, absolutely.
It was a really good session tonight, so thank you very much.
You are so very welcome. All right, I'll get you an email out here in a little bit tonight.
Thank you.
You bet. Okay. Bueller? Going once. And twice. And I've got some vegetable juice to make. So we are done now. Endless blessings and gratitude to everyone. Bye-bye.